Okay, so hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Fall Global. This is where we connect with global first entrepreneurs and tech leaders, remote work experts from all around the world. Our guest today is Jeremy Thomas, VP of Engineering at Bonusly. Jeremy, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, Vit, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show. And given your extensive experience leading like engineering teams at companies like Gusto, Middesk, and now Bonusly, could you maybe share a brief overview of your journey in the tech space and tech industry, maybe highlighting some key milestones and, you know, lessons learned along the way?
Yeah, I actually have no business being in tech. I have a liberal arts degree in Spanish and thought many years ago that I would be working in Latin America in some way, either maybe in the coffee industry or the airline industry. And I was interested in technology. This is at the end of the first dot-com boom. So around 2000 when I graduated. And I remember, you know, if you could say the word Java, then it felt like you would be hired into tech. And I was just fascinated by what was going on with all these dot-coms. And I was lucky to get a job as a management analyst at a college with a company called KPMG. And I remember being attached to a technical team, but doing more analysis for requirements, much like a product manager would do. And just thinking, wow, the engineers are the ones who really understand what's going on. And just became even more interested in a technical career for myself. And I was lucky to be sent to Australia for a project. It was a proof of concept with a company down there, a big telco called Telstra. And still as an analyst, I remember we finished the proof of concept. It went well. The client wasn't sure if they wanted us to proceed with the larger project after the proof of concept, but they also didn't want all of the folks who had flown into Australia who had gathered the expertise to leave. And so they paid for us to stay for 2 months and just show up. It was called a bridging contract, which is basically like, let's retain all the people. And I went to a bookstore and I bought Beginning Java 2 for non-programmers and read every page, understood, like got indoctrinated into all these concepts of object-oriented programming, you know, encapsulation, inheritance, et cetera, polymorphism. And it just clicked. I gained an appreciation for code as a craft in a way that wasn't obvious before. You know, I think as an outsider, it seemed like in engineering, in software engineering, like there's a right way and a wrong way to do a thing. And I immediately grokked that there are hundreds of ways to approach and solve a problem, and that there's a lot of creativity in engineering. And so I became enamored of this and was lucky enough, once the big project happened, to be given a adapter in Java to write that integrated this workflow system I knew as an analyst into the overall solution that we were building. And from there, my career took off. So I never left software engineering. For the rest of my career at KPMG, I was software engineering. And then I went in industry, as consultants say, with a startup in San Diego as a .NET engineer. I did a short stint back in consulting. And so I spent, you know, my first 7 years as an IC. And then around 2008, I worked at a company called the Active Network in San Diego. And it was my first engineering manager gig. And this is now when I am making the transition from my job being to write code every day, you know, where I can almost have this visceral sense of accomplishment, like I built this thing, into a world where I'm managing humans. And the work is much less, you know, measurable. I found it quite easy to go home every day saying, what did I actually do? That transition was good. And I started to recalibrate what work is in the management sphere relative to the IC sphere. And I was lucky there. You know, I accrued more responsibility over 4.5 years. I didn't write a line of production code at the Active Network for that period of time. And I got to a point where I was managing a very large team, about 77 engineers. I had two teams in Xi'an, China. and flew out there a couple times to do some Agile training. And that was where, you know, I got my first real exposure to working with engineers who are in distant time zones, at least, but also where there's a language barrier. And I think that experience formed a basis for how I approach what I'll call offshore, where there's a big time zone gap. What we tried to do first was integrate the team in China directly into the US team. And so we had our Chinese engineers commingled with the US engineers, and they were, you know, it meant that the US engineers had to work a little bit later in order to have overlap, and the Chinese team came in a little bit earlier to have overlap. But then there was this big gap of time where the Chinese engineers didn't have any support from the US engineers, and then vice versa. And so on my second trip to China, we realized we need to create autonomous teams. We need to give them a charter that they can own, and they need to be able to make their own decisions in their own working hours, potentially even in Mandarin, and that could drive efficiency. So it became clear to me fairly early on that in the offshore model, I should prefer, and I think we should prefer, giving teams charters and giving them ownership over outcomes so that they can make their own decisions in their own real time. And so anyway, I gained that experience there, and then I had a chance to leave all of this sort of corporate ladder ascension and go to San Francisco to start a company from the ground up. And so I got back into code. I didn't code for 5 years at work, and then I got back into code as a CTO. We raised money and hired a few people. That company didn't work out after about a year. So then I tried it again with another company. I was a CEO of a company called Inkshares, 7-person company. I'm still coding half the time, and fell back in love with that. And we almost made it into orbit with Inkshares. I learned how to be scrappy, and that worked really well subsequent, like at Gusto and Middesk, and now at Bonusly, where I'm VP of engineering. I was hired after Inkshares to start Denver engineering for Gusto, and did a lot of scrappy things there. So recruiting was intermittently available. I did a lot of outreach. I also wrote code at Gusto for about 9 months, and you know, really helped build the team there. But it was a nice confluence of the scrappiness that I had doing seed stage startups for almost 4 years with my corporate experience, like building larger teams. And then at Middesk, it was a lot about team building there as well. So I borrowed what I did at Gusto to help build teams. And now at Bonusly, I'm actually coding again, in part to fill some gaps that we have. But I've also learned in my career that it's important to stay in contact with the code. I think what we sold ourselves is this idea that engineering leaders at some point need to leave the code, and your job is more about managing humans, and you're just doing people management, you know, almost like, you know, one-on-ones and focusing more on that EQ side, which is super important. But I think it's important to stay in touch with the code as well. And I think as an engineering leader, like, to look for opportunities to continue to contribute technically, even if you're managing large teams. I think these opportunities are always there. It's a matter of prioritization. And so that idea has stayed with me and is actually featuring prominently in what I'm doing at Bonusly today.
And you mentioned this, and I would like to go a bit deeper. You have this experience as an entrepreneur, Inkshares and Pop Experts, two companies you co-founded. Both had this unique missions. Inkshares democratized like a publishing, while Pop Expert facilitated like a learning from experts globally, right? So how have the insights gained from like these ventures influenced your strategies and let's say contributions in your roles at Middesk, Bonusly, maybe other companies?
Yeah. Startups, especially really early ones, the ones that do well generally have people who have a sense of agency, but importantly have a good sense of taste. Taste in what good product experience is. And even when you're writing code at these companies, the engineers who are successful are the ones who also have a really good sense of user experience of what customer problems they're solving, and actually place primacy over solving those problems over building elegant systems or solving more structural issues in their code. And that mentality, that idea that the point is to create customer outcomes, not to ship output, works really well in larger company settings as well. And what I've observed is a lot is larger companies like Gusto and now like Bonusly look to emulate that behavior in the engineers that it hires. So, you know, at Gusto, we strove to find people who had that startup customer-oriented mindset in engineering, who could make good product decisions as they're coding, and who in some ways could actually substitute for a product manager if needed. Like, had such good product sense that they can make these decisions. And I think engineers with good product sense end up, because we're writing code or making all these micro decisions that add up to user experience, they end up actually driving value to customers at a higher velocity than engineers who prefer to just work from a list of tasks. And so I think by and large, what I've taken away from that is it's important to build an engineering team where the majority, and I wouldn't say everybody, but the majority behaves this way, because I think that creates really great outcomes for a company.
And speaking about Gusto and your experience there, you have been noted for your role in building one of Gusto's like a most diverse engineering teams. Can you talk more about that experience and what maybe strategies from it you find most applicable to your current role at Bonusly?
Yeah, I mean, diversity has many dimensions, and if we focus on gender diversity for a moment, the tech industry has successfully marginalized half of the smart people. So people who identify as women, there are just aren't a lot in the tech industry. And that is nonsensical to me. What I want to do as someone who's building teams is have access to hire all of the smart people, not just half of them. So why not build a culture that's inviting to the whole population, not just a segment of it? There's altruism like attached to this as well, but that's not the business driver. The business driver is expanding the pool of really great people to then source and hire from. And so then you have to ask the question: why is the pool segmented to a subsection of people, and what can we do to fix it? And so I went out and with a partner in crime, Patrick, at Gusto, and we set out to broaden the pool. And that had to do with the shape of culture. So building a more inviting workplace, culturally, so that like once people get to Gusto and are working there, they want to stay. That's important. But then also the strategy for building the funnel. And if you do nothing and just post a job, what will happen is people who are properly and in many ways overrepresented in tech will apply. And that's fine. Like, we want to hire them because they're great engineers. But to balance the pool, to get like the whole population of humans, you have to also change your sourcing strategy so that you're targeting a lot of folks who are underrepresented in tech. And then you end up with a really balanced pool. And if you've done it well, then that pool will look like the population of people that lives wherever you're targeting. And so that was the approach we took there. And simply by creating a balanced hiring pipeline at Gusto, we were able to build a team that was 44% women in engineering, and then the remainder identified as male.
That's super cool. Was your experience at companies like MeetDesk and Bonusly, both of which operate in a remote or this hybrid model, right? Let's talk a bit more about this. You touched this, but still, what unique challenges maybe and opportunities do you see in building and leading engineering teams in such environments, like a remote or a hybrid, or maybe just global first environment?
Yeah, the challenge is always around communication. I mean, in most of my career, I've worked in an office, and prior to the pandemic, I was an advocate of working in one physical location. And I remember there was an engineer who we were really excited about at Gusto, and he lived in Idaho and wanted to stay in Idaho. And this is before the pandemic, and Gusto had a no, you need to work in one of our office locations policy. And so we ended up passing on this candidate due to the geo constraint. And that seems ludicrous to me now. But the advantage you have when everybody's in the office is it is easier to create gelled teams. So teams that have high coherence, psychological safety, shared sense of purpose. It is easier to do that in a physical location. The problem, and Martin Fowler talks about this really well, the problem is if you constrain your hiring pool to people who live within 50 miles of your office location or who are willing to move into that area, then you're capping the potential here. Whereas if you expand that circle and you allow yourself to hire that person in Idaho, you're also allowing yourself to hire like the best talent instead of like the best talent that lives within 50 miles of your office. And so if you accept that as a strategy, then you're going to incur the trade-off of collaboration being harder to come by. And I think the pandemic has helped as to a degree here, at least from my perspective, because it's gotten people accustomed to video conversations and to collaborating in these asynchronous or remote ways. And so the tooling at least isn't foreign. Like anywhere you work, I went from Gusto to even PopExpert to Inkshares to Gusto to Middesk to Bonusly. And like Slack has been pervasive in all of these experiences. So like communicating, understanding the tool is something that actually works really well. So the tooling is there, but I think then you have to take extraordinary steps to collaborate with people, which means putting time on a calendar, because those opportunities to collide in unplanned ways in person just aren't there. So you have to be a lot more thoughtful and deliberate. I think then when we think about expanding beyond just the borders of the U.S., this idea of hiring beyond the 50-mile radius in the office, then it can extend to other countries, which is exciting. And this way of operating then gives Bonusly access to engineers in places like Mexico and Colombia and Brazil. We've decided, because of our size, to go up and down, so what we're calling nearshore, which prefers time zone alignment and like overlapping business hours, over something that we would call maybe offshore, which is where there's like a major time zone gap, let's say hiring engineers in China and India. So I don't know if that's in our future, but certainly nearshore expansion I think is, because it fits really well with the way that we're working anyway.
And speaking about that, as we've been working with Bonusly for a while, helping you guys hire a number of engineers in Latin America, I know that from day one, the decision was to integrate your Latin American engineers directly into existing like teams alongside U.S.-based engineers, right? So could you share more about how Bonusly ensures this supportive and engaging work culture for both remote like or nearshore and US-based teams, considering this integration approach?
Yeah, the advantage of nearshore is that we can deploy an integration model with our teams, in contrast to offshore, where, let's say, coming back to the China example, the time zone difference is quite prohibitive there. I mean, it's some people do it. I've just found it not as easy to do. So for us, that means the engineers we have in Brazil, in Mexico, in Argentina, are mixed in with the teams that are mostly composed of engineers that are in the U.S. And they do on-call rotations with everybody. We had an engineer from Brazil speak at an all-hands meeting yesterday, talking about something that he'd built. And the point is that they are bonusly engineers, and they're not different in terms of treatment, in terms of project work, in terms of career expectations. And that, I think, works really well. I think for me, a mode where they were like the Latin American engineers and sort of the separate group just wouldn't work really well. And I can imagine it would be quite isolating for the Latin American engineers too. I mean, there's just like no need to create a separation. And so I think that this model of integrations worked out really well.
And was the growing trend of remote work, global hiring, what are your predictions for the future of global hiring practices? Do you see any sort of limit to global hiring positions? I mean, like, are there any certain limits that we cannot go above, a sort of levels of roles that you think are not efficient to hire globally, and it's better to focus on the domestic market for those specific role? Or is it more a matter of internal management process where with a proper preparation, it becomes feasible?
I think a company needs to have a culture that where if it's going to prefer the integration model, which I just described, it needs to already operate in a remote-friendly way. So that would be a constraint. Does the company already operate in a remote-friendly way? And if so, then it can do the integration model. If not, then it has to change its culture first, and then it can do the integration model. That's model number one. Model number two would be to borrow the hub model and the spoke model, and basically look for an opportunity to create a new nexus, like a new office in a different location. And you see companies like Stripe doing this in Ireland. You see companies like Facebook doing this in Mexico, where they have office locations that behave like any other office location at Facebook. And then that would be clustering, let's say, the Mexican engineers, and they would work together in person, let's say, on a product. But I think absent any of those strategies, then there's a constraint, and I think this working out really well. So that would be one thing is how does a company want to operate, and then how does that fit in with the remote strategy and an offshore strategy? I think the other constraint is going to be, my prediction is going to be, we're going to see an equalization of comp across the industry. So we're already seeing this in the US, where companies that have stayed remote or that have always been remote are reassessing their geo pay strategies, and many of them aren't adjusting their pay. So that means if you are an engineer in the middle of the US in Iowa, you're making the same as an engineer in New York City. And so then the logical extension is, well, why doesn't that also ring true for an engineer in Mexico? And it's hard to argue that it shouldn't, to be honest. And I think, frankly, a lot of companies are doing offshore or nearshore, in part because it gives them access to great talent, but in part because relative to the US job market, it's cheaper to hire talent in those locations. And I think that latter point is going to diminish. I think over time, we will see the salaries of engineers around the world start to equalize. And so that means that the cost or the economic related reason to go north or south or east to west in terms of a workforce expansion will start to be less compelling. And I think the case will then be rooted more in access to talent than it is an economic one. So that's my prediction.
Awesome. And finally, looking ahead, what advice would you give to maybe future or current entrepreneurs or maybe tech leaders looking to build and scale like a globally distributed teams? Maybe three main, you know, key pieces of advice, you know?
Yeah. Number one is to be deliberate. So have a strategy in place. And that's either, I'm going to hire engineers to augment my team, and they're going to work with my team directly and be part of the crew. That's an approach that you can take. And then there are things that you should do in order to make that work really well. Tooling, office hour alignment, things like that. But I think being deliberate about it, and in that case, you would say, I'm only going to hire people who live north to south to me for time zone alignment. Another deliberate move would be, oh, I'm only going to hire people who are in a certain place in China, or at least who have time zone overlap in that location so that they can maximize work hours. But I think in both cases, you have to sort of make a choice and not spread across all these different permutations. So be deliberate about it is number one. Number two is look for opportunities to give folks who are remote meaningful charters and meaningful areas to contribute to the company. And I think you'd be surprised, let's say in an offshore model where you open an office in a time zone that's far away from let's say the HQ, I think you'd be surprised at how quickly a team there can seize a business problem and own it. But you have to be deliberate about deciding which chunk, like which part, which domain of your product are you going to uplift and send over there? And who am I going to fly to that location in order to train the folks on the domain and impart some of the culture that we like about our company there? And so that's another example of like being deliberate around the setup. And I guess like those are the two things is like thinking about your approach. Are you going to go north to south? Are you going to go east to west? And then being consistent with how you apply it.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Jeremy, for your insights on building diverse global distributed teams, on navigating like a remote work dynamics, on strategies for scaling engineering, operations. So yeah, wishing you and the Bonusly team continued success. Thanks a lot for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Fit.